The Beach 99.4.
I'm Chris with you through until noon. It's a bit of a morning of anniversaries this morning. We've got the 40th anniversary of the release of Sgt. Pepper's. It's Queen's Birthday weekend, which is an anniversary of sorts. And also in the coming week, on the 8th of June, it's the 20th anniversary of the passing of New Zealand's nuclear-free legislation, a world first declaring the whole country nuclear-free. Now, to mark that anniversary, I'm joined this morning in my feature interview with Mani Thompson, a peace activist of long standing from Waiheke, who's going to be sharing her recollections about her peace activism work throughout that period around the time of the nuclear-free legislation. Good morning, Mani.
Good morning.
And welcome along to the station.
I'm very happy to be here.
Now, when I think back to the 1980s, and I was a bit younger than I am now, I had an overwhelming sense of fear that there was a nuclear war imminent. Was that how you felt at that time?
Yes. Well, there was a lot of talk about that. And there was a woman that came over from America called Helen Caldicott. And she said she had a dream of the possibility of a nuclear war being put off by thousands and thousands and thousands of people gathering together and stopping it. And as I heard her talking, I was determined that I was going to be one of those people amongst the thousands. So very early in the 80s, we seem to get started with a peace movement here. The details of it I can't remember, but I do remember one of the early things we did was to walk to Wellington to ask the government to make New Zealand nuclear-free. That was in 1983, and there was a small group of people with children. We had a van where the children slept at night, and people wheeled their children some of the way, and I didn't have any children, so I was privileged to walk all the way from Wellington, from Auckland to Wellington, and it was a great experience. And when we got to about Otaki, we woke up one morning and said that something had happened politically. And David Longley had got in, New Zealand had been declared nuclear-free.
Yeah, so we had that policy implemented with the Labor government election in 1984. Did you get a sense as you were on that walk to Wellington that there was overwhelming public support, or was it still a time of building support for a ban on nuclear weapons?
Oh, there wasn't overwhelming support there. I think people thought we were a bit queer. But gradually, when by the time we got there, there was more support. But it's true that Waiheke was one place where the enthusiasm rose very quickly. And for some reason, any of the movements that we did, it was always strongly supported. In 1984, when we went to Greenham Common, we were very concerned about the Greenham Common women that had been sitting there protesting against the American leaving their missiles right in their parks. And we decided we would take a team of us over there, so there was no trouble to get money and support from the Waiheke people to do that.
So how did you go about raising the funds to get that group over there?
All sorts of ways, selling this and that, we were raising money anyway at our peace stall that we had at the market, selling tea and coffee. But I can't even remember all the different ways we did it. But we had amazing support for it from all the Waiheke people.
So there were a small group of you from Waiheke who actually went to the UK,
yes,
weren't there?
Yes, yes. And that was a great experience for us. Partly because one of the things was meeting so many people from so many different areas, not just in England, but in Europe too, different areas and groups of people that had come to protest with us. It really was a learning experience for us, and they were living in very roughly in the cold and the wet and the wind, like it could be in Wellington, in England, with little sitting around little fires and sleeping in little tents. Of course, why New Zealand people could join in that kind of lifestyle very well, and we soon made some wonderful friends. There were actually 9 miles around this fence where these American missiles were kept, and there were different groups called by the different rainbow names. I think we were attached ourselves to the green rainbow. I can't remember the details, but all the way around there were protests. And we became particularly friendly with the Australian women, who were able to tell us some of the testing that the Americans had been doing right down here in the Pacific. And that was a very real reason for us to be there.
And I suppose, I mean, although you'd achieved that victory in New Zealand of seeing, you know, the Labor government take that stance against nuclear weapons or nuclear power here, it was really needing to get out on the international stage if you were to really make a difference.
That's right. Well, they persuaded us that we'd better do the real thing and break through the fence and make as a proper. So Australian women told us the best place to go through, and we went around the back and crept through the bushes. We felt as if we were like the dad's army, only it was a mum's army the way we crept around. And then somebody got on someone's shoulders with the big clippers, and we actually did cut through the wire and got through and sort of started to dance around the airways where they did it, knowing we would be caught, of course, but we were quite happy to do it. And it was sort of quite funny in a way, because one English copper picked me up and by my shoulders put me into a truck, and we were ushered into this truck. But we had made a little decision beforehand that we're each going to take the part of somebody, and I said I was going to take the part of a very old religious lady. And so while we were sitting in the truck, one of our friends said, "Well, how are you feeling, Mani?" And I said, "Oh, I feel fine, because I have God on my side." And this English cop said, "Sitting on your left." And I thought that was very quick and very funny. And you couldn't take it seriously after that, because he obviously saw through our little act. And they eventually just drove us back and let us out with a bit of a warning.
How long did you spend at Greenham Common?
Oh, about 10 days altogether. But the other important thing that we did there was to go up to London to the Howard Hotel and meet David Longy. And David Longy was over there to talk to Mrs. Thatcher about New Zealand being nuclear free. But when we got to the hotel, with all our banners and our peculiar clothes, they wouldn't let us into the main entrance at all. That we were definitely clearly ushered out. But Tom Scott was there, and he must have given someone, David, the word, because a moment there, when they were ready, the first thing David did was to put his head out the door and said, "I'm looking for my friends, Mani Thompson," and came straight over and talked to us about what we were doing. And of course, all those people that had been pushing us aside must have felt a bit embarrassed, at least we hope they did. And he talked to us, and we told him that we were doing at our level what he was doing at his level, talking to Mrs. Thatcher. So it was really, he was very warm and pleased to see us, and it was quite an adventure, really.
What kind of reaction did people in New Zealand and in Waiheke have to the reports of you know, your arrest and what you'd been up to at Greenham Common?
I have no idea, because I wasn't here. I've got no idea. But one thing that was interesting was that there was a German woman there camping next to us who invited Kit Nelson and me to go over and stay with her in Germany, in Braunschweig, and take part in a peace march in Germany. And we did that. And that was quite amazing for both Kit and me, because we'd been taken part in the war against Germany, and here we were walking around the main street in Braunschweig in a peace march. And I don't know whether they knew where we were. We were walking with a lot of women who were part of a democratic group. And it became quite an event for us to do that before we got home. But we felt mainly the reason for us being there was to support those people that had done it for so long and learn so much more about the different groups and what was happening.
I suppose they were a little more at the sharp end than perhaps we were in New Zealand, weren't we? I mean, it was, you know, relatively easy for New Zealand to say no to nuclears when we had no nuclear weapons and had no nuclear power plants. However, in Europe, you're in countries where they've got those weapons and they've got the power plants. A little more difficult there.
Yes, well, we learned a lot more about that, although we were concerned about the testing here in the south, in the Pacific. So we felt by the time we got back that we had done something worthwhile, and we were welcomed back. The Waiheke people welcomed us back with quite a lot of enthusiasm.
And your efforts continued, even though we had that nuclear-free policy in New Zealand, you still felt it was important to keep campaigning throughout that period?
Very much so. And we had plenty of enthusiasm. I remember working on committees with Helen Clark and so on, and I was most amazed the other week when she was out here that she remembered me and came up and gave me a hug and said, "Hello, Manny." And I wouldn't have thought that. I knew we had worked on these things years ago, but I was so surprised that she should have remembered me. But it was a very real movement for New Zealand, not just. But what pleased me was that, in a way, the Waiheke people were well to the front in their support, so that when the next thing came along and Anne McFarlane told us about this walk across America, we had so much support that Anne and I were able to do that.
Now, what year was that?
That was 1986, 2 years later. And we had great support for that. One old man of 90 said, "Well, I'd not expected to live any longer, but," he said, if you two go, "I'll give you $5,000 because it'll be worth my while to live another year if you go over to do this." And all sorts of people gave us support for this walk. And both for Anne and me, it was a wonderful experience to meet and walk with hundreds of other Americans, people from all different countries, and lots of Americans. We'd got used to thinking of Americans being pro-nuclear, but we met thousands of people that weren't.
But where did that walk go? What part of the United States?
We started off from Los Angeles on the 1st of March, and we went right across through Chicago and through the different places, and landed in Washington on the 15th of November. So it took us about 8.5 months to 9 months to do the whole thing. And of course, we were working. It's not as if we were walking on our own. We were protected. We had trucks that would take our gear and prepared food for us and that sort of thing. But we stuck to our commitment of walking as much as we possibly could. And that was a wonderful adventure.
So with both the Greenham Common trip and with the walk across America, what did you see as the overriding purpose in terms of, you know, the peace movement and your involvement in that? What was behind it?
Well, the main thing was to change people's attitude towards nuclear war being a wonderful way to do anything. There were so many different church groups that gave us great welcome when we were there and took us into their homes and gave us showers and food and supported us on the way. But then when we got to one area where there were very fundamentalist, very narrow religious people, and they didn't like us a bit, and they kept well out of our way.
Well, of course, David Longy's opponent in the Oxford debate was Jerry Falwell, who was a fundamentalist preacher, wasn't he?
Yes, well, that was... I'd forgotten about that bit, but mostly, we had great support from particularly the middle of the road religions, and that was very satisfying, really. And we just hoped that we were able to tell each place we went, we would be able to tell people about our New Zealand attitude and why we had become nuclear free. And why it was important not just to have nuclear arms, but to have the whole thing completely free. And Anne did more of the talking because she had a few problems with her walking. And so she went into more schools than I did and did her talking. And I stuck to the road as long as I could. And that was a great adventure also.
Now, Anne's another Waiheke Islander. What's her last name?
Anne McFarland.
Right.
She lives in town now, but she was a Waiheke Islander then. And we committed ourselves to sticking to it, and we were pretty proud of ourselves, really, the way we did it and landed. And both of us were chosen to speak at the final rally at Lincoln Memorial Centre. And when I'd finished my speech, a big tall man came up and introduced himself, and he was Benjamin Spock. Well, I don't know whether you know anything about Benjamin Spock, but all the mothers in those days knew about Benjamin Spock and his new way of bringing up children and families. And he introduced me to Ralph Nader, who was another person well known now. He was a strong greenie, of course, in those days, but he stood to be president, hasn't got in yet, but he has stood, a very fine man. So it was quite a special moment in my life to be talking to these two important people and thousands and thousands of Americans. So That was a really great adventure.
Mm. Now, we'll take a little break now, and when we come back, we're going to hear more about, I suppose, bringing the campaign against nuclear weapons a little closer to home and the campaign against French nuclear testing in the Pacific. You're listening to Island Life, and I'm talking to Manny Thompson, peace activist from Waiheke, talking about her peace activism work in the 1980s, marking the 20th anniversary of the 1987 passing of nuclear-free legislation in New Zealand. And Manny, you were involved in the campaign around French nuclear testing also.
Yes, a few of us, I think Kit Nelson and I, particularly, we joined the Women's Peace Flight that went to Tahiti to protest against the French testing at Mururoa. And the French, they didn't like us doing that at all. We weren't... It was quite a difficult thing to be doing, but we felt it was important to support the native people there. And I don't know how effective it was, but we were pleased to be able to support the native people in that area.
And you had quite a bit of resistance from the French authorities?
Yes. It wasn't all sweet and lovely.
Right. Now, you must be heartened that we've reached a stage, it seems, in New Zealand, where the nuclear-free status seems to be generally accepted.
Well, I think this is the important thing that I could say today, that I don't think there's any doubt about it, that New Zealand wouldn't be persuaded at any stage to go back to having nuclear, depending on nuclear armaments or any other nuclear things, really. I think it is. And what makes me proud is that, in a way, Waiheke people were right in the front of that move and strongly supporting. And we had a jolly good, lively peace movement. We don't seem to be doing much these days, but it is there, because it is there, really, and it's taken for granted that Waiheke that New Zealand is strongly against any sort of form of nuclear, particularly nuclear war.
It seems, although we still have a strong peace movement, you know, people particularly focused on the war in Iraq, but people have kind of dropped their eye from that nuclear weapon issue, haven't they? We don't see a lot of campaigning or discussion around nuclear weapons, though I see that the UK is just putting something through Parliament there at the moment about renewing their nuclear weapon stock.
Well, I think it's because it's just taken for granted. One thing you mentioned before about Mr. Longy in his debate, that was one of the important things that we met as we met American people. They'd all knew about this. They'd listened to David Longy, and they were all very, very impressed with that speech he gave at Oxford. And so that often we would introduce ourselves from New Zealand, and they'd say, "Oh yes, we heard your Prime Minister, and what a great man he is." So that was interesting.
But really, it was that the building of public support from, you know, people such as yourself, the really that made it possible for a politician to take that stance, wasn't it?
Yes. And it was a great opportunity for us to tell the American people what we thought about it.
You must look back
on...
We had
one or two funny incidents, like when we arrived there, Anne, my friend, tied her shoes to the fence of the White House when we reached there, and the shoes were arrested and put in the truck. We weren't arrested ourselves, but it was funny. Quite a few people tied their shoes to the fence, and Anne was one of them. And all sorts of funny things happened, of course, on the way. It would make quite a funny story, really, if we told the whole thing.
When you look at the world now, we started off, I suppose, talking about that sense of fear that people had in the 1980s. Do you have more hope or less hope for our future than you did now?
Well, I have hope, whether it's reasonable or not, because I am a hopeful sort of person. And also, at my age, I haven't got much time or energy to do anything more spectacular than just support the people that are doing things now. So I really have to have hope.
And you certainly must have a sense of pride of what you did contribute to that
pride,
campaign.
Certainly pride. Not for myself, but pride for Waiheke people, and proud of New Zealand people for being so aware of it all.
Yeah, well, thank you very much for joining us this morning, Maney. It's been an absolute pleasure talking to you. And we want to thank you very much for coming in. The 8th of June is the 20th anniversary of New Zealand's nuclear-free policy. The Labour introduced it as a policy in 1984. In 1987, it was passed into legislation. And that's the 20th anniversary on the 8th of June. Just to mark that, we've been talking to Waiheke peace activist Maney Thompson. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you.
You're on the beach, 99.4 FM. This is Island Life.